Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining me today in this podcast. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at www.audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. I have a great show for you today. I'll be teaching you how to thrive instead of survive. I'll also be interviewing occupational therapist and author Kat Elton, who shares her own story of battling a chronic illness and how she instills hope in her patients. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but many of you do not know me as a composer. My latest album, Restoration, was just released. Restoration is a continuation of the first album, Consolation. I like to think of these albums like books. Each original composition is written like a chapter in a book. And like in any story, the character goes from a sense of grief and loss, and at the end of Consolation, finds hope for his future. In Restoration, he has an awakening. And in that awakening, he recognizes all the things in his life which are not healthy, and it helps him come to a place of restoration, becoming greater than he was before. You may purchase this album on iTunes or any other digital music store. The name of the album is Restoration, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you are currently hearing is entitled Farewell. A new resident arrived at the nursing home. He was a 92-year-old, petite, poised, and proud man, well-dressed, and his hair was neatly combed and his face shaved perfectly smooth. Even though he was legally blind, he decided to move to the nursing home. His wife of 65 years recently passed away, making the move necessary. After waiting patiently in the lobby of the nursing home, he smiled sweetly when he was told his room was ready. As he maneuvered his walker to the elevator, the attendant verbally provided a visual description of his tiny room. As he entered the room, he was ecstatic and said, "I love it," with the enthusiasm of an 8-year-old having just been presented with a new puppy. "Mr. Roth, please calm down," the attendant admonished. "You know you have a vision problem and cannot see the room." "That doesn't have anything to do with it," he replied. "Happiness is something you decide on ahead of time. Whether I like the room or not doesn't depend on how the furniture is arranged. It's how I arrange my mind. I already decided to love it. That's the kind of decision I make every morning when I wake up. I have a choice. I can spend the day in bed recounting the difficulty I have with the parts of my body that no longer work, or I can get out of bed and be thankful for the ones that do." And then he said, "Each day is a gift, and as long as my eyes are open, I'll focus on the new day and all the happy memories I've stored away." Are you surviving or thriving? All living creatures must adapt to their environment, and if they don't, then they're not going to make it. Think of a cactus. A cactus is specifically designed for the desert, for places where there's not a lot of water, and it thrives. But you put a maple or an oak tree in that same location, and it's not going to survive because it wasn't made for that. And even when it comes to humans, our ancestors are from different locations, and our skin color, the way our eyes are, many different things adapted to that environment so that we could thrive. And because of technology, those factors no longer matter because we can live wherever we want to live in the world. And so that type of survival or thriving is no longer important. Life is going to happen to us. We can often get very comfortable in our life. And in that comfort, we can get used to our surroundings, the people around us, our job, our family, our financial situation. All that can feel very safe for us. But what happens when we're blindsided by something? What happens when we get this devastating diagnosis or this terminal diagnosis? Or what happens if we get laid off? Or what happens if we have to file for bankruptcy or we go through a divorce or have a loss in the family? What do we do? The whole concept of surviving versus thriving is really in our mindset. And I'll explain more about that in a minute. But let's just think about this. When a situation in our life happens, we want to go back to that time, that blissful time when things just felt normal, when they felt comfortable, when we didn't have to worry about things. But when we get this news that something has changed, it's hard for us to kind of live in the moment, and we want it to go back to what it was before. We want to think the same way. We want to be that same person. But that's not life. We have to adapt. And in that adaptation is where we either survive or we thrive. Who you used to be, if that is you're a married person or you are a very wealthy person or you are a healthy person, all of those different descriptors that we use may change based on the current situation. And if they have changed, we have to radically accept the new changes. And I actually did an episode on that quite a while ago in my podcast, so I'd recommend that you go back and listen to that. But radical acceptance is you essentially accept the facts as they are. It doesn't mean that you approve of the facts, that you're okay with it, or you're okay with what someone did, or you're okay with the news that you got. But it simply is, these are the facts that are in front of me right now. I can't change them. But what can I change? What can I do with these facts? And that is where your mindset comes in. That is where the perception shift that you have, which allows you to either survive or thrive. So thriving in the dictionary actually means to grow or develop successfully, to flourish or succeed despite or because of your circumstances. And the surviving part of it is just barely making it, barely being able to hold your head above the water and be able to just navigate the situation. Now, of course, don't get me wrong. When life happens to us, we are going to be stunned. We're going to be shocked. And that is very, very normal. So I don't want to minimize that. But there's a difference between how long we're shocked and then we go into the proactive mode. For example, if I come up and I startle you, of course you're going to be startled. But for the next hour or so, if you're still feeling startled, well, that doesn't make sense. And it's the same concept when it comes to surviving versus thriving. When a situation happens, you're immediately going to survive. And then we have to switch our mentality to thrive. I moved down here to Florida about a year ago. And in that, of course, there's so many palm trees. I actually grew up in the north. And for me, the whole vegetation down here is completely different. But there was a tropical storm that came through here, and I was reading about the palm trees. And there's a certain type of palm tree that actually flourishes when it's being bent over. You know, we've all seen those pictures of when a hurricane goes through and how these trees are bent over almost to the ground. But what we didn't realize is that when they're bent over, that is actually the time that they grow the fastest and grow the most because their roots are stretched. And in that stretching process allows for them to grow. And so once the storm is over, those trees stand back up. And they're strengthened in their foundation. They're strengthened in their core. And that is how they get bigger and bigger. So I really love that concept of a palm tree and how it thrives in its situation when it's being beat down, when it looks like it's going to be crushed. And so we have to have that mindset as well. So I'd really ask you, what is your definition of thriving in your current situation? And what is your definition of surviving? Because when you're able to make your own understanding of what that looks like, then that helps you formulate a plan. If you can no longer do something, if you're no longer mobile the way you used to be, what do you do differently? If all of a sudden you no longer have finances, well, what can you focus on right now? The negative self-talk you have, the negative belief, and the emotional forecasting that you have is really going to determine how well you thrive in this current situation. So going back to your definition of thriving, when you know what that looks like and you can really give data for yourself. For example, if I'm no longer mobile, if I'm no longer able to run the way I used to run, or I'm no longer be able to do those active things that I used to do, well, then my definition of thriving would be what? Would that still be finding a different activity? Or would I be able to do different things with my arms? And now, of course, it's not ideal because if we go back to that mindset of where we used to be, well, then we're going to get lost in that and we're going to struggle with a new version of who we are. But that new version of who we are can just be as excellent as that previous version. But we have to figure it out. And that's where the thriving comes in. And that's why it's really important to really quantify or really measure what thriving looks like. Me doing these activities means for myself that I am thriving. Me not doing certain things that I could do now perhaps shows that I'm just surviving. And so once again, it's all in the mindset that we have. It's all about our perception in the moment to determine if we're just going to barely make it or with our new set of circumstances, are we going to thrive like we did before the situation happened? And by no means am I minimizing the struggle and the pain and all that you're experiencing right now, but I really want to instill in you the hope that whatever you're experiencing right now, if it just feels like you're surviving, it doesn't mean you can't thrive. It just means you have to figure out the new version of who you are and how to make it work because it can work. I'm confident you can do this. It's all in your mindset. It's all in the perception of the direction you want to go versus being stuck in what used to be. And now a quick word from my sponsor. Audible.com is offering you, my listener, a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/JamesMillerLifeology. Many of you don't know this about me, but I'm an avid reader, so this is a no-brainer for me to go ahead and download any audiobook I'd like to read, specifically if I'm walking my dog, at the gym, or just even driving. So for you to get your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/JamesMillerLifeology. They have over 180,000 books for you to choose from, so I'm pretty confident you'll find the one you're looking for. So check it out today. Author and occupational therapist Kat Elton shares her story of living with a chronic disease and how she teaches her clients who may also suffer with a chronic ailment to live a happy, successful life. Welcome to my show, Kat.
thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, such a pleasure to have you on my show. Now, an occupational therapist, what exactly is that?
I've had that question many times in my life. An OT is, if you think about the field of rehabilitation, so someone who has a sports injury or stroke or any kind of injury or illness, a lot of times you have to go to a physical or occupational therapist. And what we do is help people to function to the best of their ability, whatever their challenges may be, whether it's, again, like I said, a disease or chronic illness, like the one that I deal with, or sports injury that maybe leaves you one-handed for 6 months and you have to learn how to live with one hand. The way I see it is I help people to help themselves. You know, I have, you know, more medical training. I have a lot of experience in the healthcare industry. Mm-hmm. And so I'm the one that can kind of guide people to problem solve for themselves, and I can help them with that. And sometimes we help with, you know, getting family and caregivers in on it and teaching the whole family. But a lot of times it's just specifically with our clients, helping them to develop strategies to improve their function. And if they can't, then how to cope with whatever functional level they're at.
And not only how to cope, but also to thrive as well.
Exactly.
That's great. Because I think sometimes people, and they're suffering from any ailment, whether it's physical, emotional, whatever it may be, mm-hmm. when you recognize what the situation is for now, then how to thrive with that, because the person's mental perceptions or their view on life in general, if it's bleak or if it's flipped in the wrong way, then they're not going to thrive. They're just simply going to survive. And it's going to be hard to navigate what their new set of circumstances may look like.
Exactly. And the history of occupational therapy, we were born as a profession treating not the physical side of disease, but the more emotional, mental side of after World War I with traumatized veterans. And that's where we actually came in. And so it's more of a psychological therapy. And what it was is more feeling better by doing. So again, we create these meaningful occupations. And people always hear the word and they think it's related to our work. And what do we do as a career? It wasn't. It was occupation, meaning what you're saying is meaningful activity. Again, helping yourself to thrive by focusing on activity that you can do and help yourself to feel better. So you're not ruminating about the things that you've lost or the horrible memories or the things that you had to go through or had to do in the past. So that's really how occupational therapy started.
I had no idea that that's where it came about as well.
And I didn't know either, actually, until I went into OT school. And I was like, wow, this is great. I love it even more.
Exactly. That's amazing. Now, you yourself struggled with a chronic disease. Do you want to tell my listeners a little bit about that?
Sure. When I was 2 years old, I have an older brother and sister, and I was the first one to walk and run around the playground like a maniac. And I was developmentally really far forward. But at the age of 2, I stopped doing all those things. I started crying and limping, and I couldn't, you know, at the playground, I just didn't want to do anything because I was limping. Mm-hmm. So my mom took me to the doctor. It took a little time for them because at first they thought maybe that I'd just been roughhousing with my older siblings. But after that, you know, wasn't obviously the case. They did a bunch of testing and found out I had juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. And that was in 1970. 1970, they didn't even know much about the immune system. And they didn't know much about what arthritis, even less than we do now. So basically my treatment was high doses of aspirin until I was like 18 years old.
Oh my gosh.
Actually it was high dose of aspirin until I got an ulcer at the age of around 10. And then it was switched to coated aspirin. Yeah. It's kind of a long story, but basically medication has been part of my life for most of my life.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you yourself, with this own disease that you have, it sounds like you thrive as well. I mean, it sounds like you're very successful. Not only are you an occupational therapist, but you're an author as well.
Yeah, well, I'm going to clarify a little bit.
Sure.
My disease, obviously, I've had it since I was 2. I'm 40. What am I now? I'm 47 now. And so it's been a long time.
Sure.
I've been through periods. I was able to do occupational therapy for about 15 years, and then my disease got really bad, really bad. And I could barely function myself.
Yeah.
It got to the point where my poor patients were feeling sorry for me when I would come in to work and be like, are you okay? And I knew the focus should not be on me. It should be on them. I took a look at my life and myself, and I thought, I love what I do, but this isn't healthy for me. And how can I be a role model? How can I teach people? So I had to do the hard decision, which was to step back from that. And that's when I started to write books. Because what I did was I spent time researching how to help myself. I learned all these different strategies, you know, being healthy despite living with severe pain, which I think isn't an oxymoron. And that's the point I want to make today, if I can, that you can have severe pain and you also be healthy. And you can have healthy strategies to live with severe pain and have a very meaningful life.
Well, that's one of the things that I teach as well. And some of the segments that I have on my show, sometimes I'll have us do a self-check-in. And what I do by that is I want people to separate between on a scale of 1 to 10, 10's the best you feel, 1's the worst you feel. When you can separate a scale for what your body feels like versus what your mind feels like.
Yeah.
Because they're not one and the same. You know, if I wake up with a cold, it doesn't mean I have to be in a crappy mood all day, or I can't do anything, or I can't be, you know, enjoy my time with doing whatever, or vice versa. If I wake up on the wrong side of the bed, it doesn't mean I can't do all the responsibility that I have that day. And I think it's really important for people to understand that one does not equate the other. So just like what you said, someone can have a chronic disease or chronic pain, but still thrive. They can still be a part of life. It's just you have to really learn how to separate between those two things and allow each one of those to kind of to take their own place, if you will, or to just how to thrive in your mindset, in your belief system.
Yeah. And that is a really, really good point that you're making, because I think that that right there, when you're talking about being resilient, and part of thriving is being resilient, especially when you have a chronic challenge like the what I live with. And that is a huge piece of it. As far as pain is not unidimensional, it's multidimensional. I look at it as a hologram. And I look at it as like it has a physical component, like you're saying, has a behavioral component, and also has a spiritual component. Uh-huh. It has an emotional component. It has all of these things. And when people feel pain, the first thing they do, you know, naturally, is you want to get away from it. It's not fun. It's not a pleasant experience. That's the whole definition. It's an unpleasant experience. Obviously, you're going to want to get away from it. But when you have chronic pain, it's very different from an acute type situation. If you'd like, I could go into the difference.
Yeah,
right
why don't you share that with
okay.
Listeners?
So basically, you know, everybody listening, every single person listening, can relate to acute pain because it's a universal experience. We all have it. Even little one-celled organisms feel pain to some extent. You know, you're going to put a noxious sensation onto them and they're going to withdraw. If you think about acute pain, you think about putting your hand into a fire, and what do? Unconsciously, you put your hand in the fire, immediately you're going to jerk back, feels that heat. And the first thing it does is it moves away. When you have a pain experience, you have three things that happen in your brain. First, it goes to one part of your brain that helps your body to quickly move back, called the cerebellum. Uh-huh. And then it goes to the limbic system, which is the emotional part of your brain. And it says, well, that was not fun. Don't do that again. That hurt. Yeah. Yuck. I hate it. And then it goes to the frontal cortex. This is the part of the thinking part, again, that says, okay, why did this happen? How can I avoid it? And what am I going to do? So again, in acute pain, say you are hiking, you sprain your ankle on a rainy day because you're like, I really want to go, and it's slippery and you just fall and you sprain your ankle. Well, again, you problem solve, well, how that happened. You think, well, maybe next time I'm going to either, you know, bring hiking poles, or maybe I won't go on such a slippery rainy day. Uh-huh. I'll do something different. When you have a chronic pain, you can't do that, because chronic pain is pain that just persists. It persists for longer than 6 months, and it just doesn't go away. And it can be caused by a lot of different types of things. In my disease, it's caused by the joint swelling that happens as a result of all this activity in the immune system that's causing our joints to think that for some reason there needs to be an inflammatory process in there. So it's a very painful thing because it limits your movement, and there's a lot of pressure and things like that. You're going to laugh when I tell you this, but when I was working as a therapist, most everybody I work with has pain, because that's the biggest symptom that will bring someone in to seek treatment.
Yeah, of course.
For a therapist, right? So I would work with these people. Meanwhile, I'm someone who lives with pain, and I'd be like, these poor people. And, you know, just in my head, I'd be feeling empathy, compassion, going, sure, these poor people with chronic pain, but not putting myself in that category. Like, I'm just like totally different. And then finally one day it dawned, I'm like, I have chronic pain. And you know, you're going to laugh because duh, of course, like everyone in the world who knows me knows that about me, but me. But I think that was part of my resilience, because for me, I look at my pain and when I check in, it's always different. Uh-huh. You know, it's not always one thing. And that's the thing about when you say chronic pain, people think, well, they're always in this amount of pain, or they just, these poor sad saps, they can't get out of it. Well, yes, there is no escape. That's the whole idea. It's chronic pain.
Sure.
But you don't have to be a sad sap. And it doesn't mean your pain is always the same. So for me, it was like always this completely changeable thing, and it continues to be. So I choose to look at it in that way instead of this eternal prison sentence mm-hmm. they have for my entire life. Yeah. You know, it's like I'm always looking at these certain things I know make my pain worse, and weather is one of them. So if we go through rainy periods, I'm going to be more painful. So if that's the case, then what other things can I do to create a buffer or maybe help my pain? So I'm going to do more things to help that pain, to lessen on. But sometimes there isn't a reason. There isn't some sort of thing that you can pinpoint and put your finger on. And that's where it gets really challenging. Sure. And going back to the brain, what happens in our brain when we feel pain, if you think about it, you can't move away from it. It's a negative emotional experience, right? Mm-hmm. You go thinking, well, how did this happen? And that can quickly turn into the why, can turn into why me? And so this can be this vicious cycle, right? Sure. So the way that our brain processes pain is helping our survival, if you think about it, right? As you say, thrive. But when it turns into this vicious chronic pain cycle, you know, we really have to be diligent in order to keep your mindset into that thriving mindset, into that resilience mm-hmm. mindset. Because in a natural way, your brain, your body is thinking, oh, this sucks, because that's what happens when you feel pain. And your brain's trying to figure out how to get out of it. So for so many years, and this is, I think, one of the problems that people have, because chronic pain is a predicament. It's not a challenge, it's a predicament. Predicament means there's not an escape from it. Exactly. You know, it can't be solved. It's here as part of your life. It's obviously not an ideal situation, but if it is something that you deal with, you have to play the hand you're dealt. Have you heard of The Last Lecture, the guy who wrote the book and wrote The Last Lecture?
No, what is that?
Okay, well, this you should check it out. This guy is Randy, and I'm going to mispronounce his last name. It's Pausch, I think. And The Last Lecture was literally a last lecture that he gave as a Carnegie Mellon professor. It's a lecture that they offer to professors. If it was your last lecture and you were going to die tomorrow, what do you want to tell people? And he got this opportunity to have this lecture. And maybe a week or around that same time, he learned he had terminal cancer and literally was going to die. It probably was his last lecture. So anyway, again, this is something for everyone who's interested, curious about life, to check out. But that was one thing, one of his points is that, you know, again, he's going to die in 6 months. He was a young father of young children. Nobody wants this to be their life, their biography. But if it is yours, if this is the hand that you're dealt with, then your choice is what to do. Mm-hmm. Again, you can get upset and you can rail against it. You can fight against it. But it's not going to change the facts of your reality.
Exactly.
What will change is what you're talking about. Yeah, it's like it. Thinking about things differently mm-hmm. and maybe changing some things that you're doing. And those things can create a much more healthy environment.
Exactly. One of the things in one of the previous podcasts, I talked with a lady and we talked about radical acceptance. Radical acceptance is essentially you accept mm-hmm. the facts as they are. And we put our emotions in it of why me, or I can't believe this is happening, and which is a very natural feeling to have. But when we just look at the facts as they are, sometimes you're just putting a list of these are the facts, and recognizing that these facts are not going to change. And whatever that may be, if it's a chronic disease, if it is a bankruptcy, if it's a loss of some sort, that is just not going to change. So when we look at that, we can't get lost in the, well, why does this happen? Why? Because that is going to paralyze us from thriving, from figuring out what to do.
Exactly. So
we look at these are the facts as they are. I don't agree with them. I hate it. But what do I do now?
Right.
We can get to that place much more quickly of these are the facts. You radically accept it. And that mm-hmm. helps us move to that mindset of that thriving capability to figure out for yourself, if it rains a lot, well, it's going to increase the pain threshold that you have. So what do you do with that? And so it helps the person then become more of an overcomer for that predicament when they can figure out what works. And, you know, sometimes our strategies work and sometimes they don't, but that gives us the opportunity to have a little bit of a respite because we feel like we're in control just a little bit. And then the more confidence we have with that, it allows us to then find something else. And you just build off of each of those things.
Yeah, it's so true. And I call it brutal honesty. We all do it. And, you know, we all need to shield ourselves sometimes from hard truths. But again, short-term, temporary, that might be a healthy thing, you know, because certain things are very scary in the whole picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you may have to just confine yourself to, you know, just not thinking about that part. But eventually you need to be able to get there, because otherwise you know, you're not going to be able to truly become healthy. And like, as you said, start overcoming some of these challenges that will come your way, regardless of whether you're ready for them or not.
Have you found that some people's idea of what the pain or disease is greater than maybe what their symptoms are? And so their perception is greater than really what their symptoms are. And so therefore they get lost in the disease as opposed to the management or the ability to thrive?
The walking wounded, wounded. People are walking wounded of those people, and they just can't get past that there's like this big mental block, right? And they can't get past that. And there, as a therapist, I totally saw that. Before you see a patient, if you're in a hospital, as an occupational therapist, you look at their chart, you look at their medical history, and is there a correlation between the number of diseases they have, the number of injuries or whatever, and how they're going to greet you when you go into their door? There really isn't. It's the fascinating thing you can have. I had one particular memory of a patient who became a great friend of mine, and I almost wanted to cry looking at her chart because she had about 20 different things, and they're all like autoimmune illnesses, lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and fibromyalgia and myasthenia gravis, and she was in there for a knee replacement, and I was like, oh no, this poor woman, she's going to be like in such a hard shape. And I go in there, she's saying, hi, how are you doing, trying to cheer me up, you know, she's got flowers or cards from her family, and it was a very good lesson for me, just what you're saying, that there isn't a direct correlation between the amount of pain or challenge or predicament you find yourself in and how you feel about it at all, or how, you know, how you present as a person emotionally, or because if you don't have any emotional resources, you're not going to be able to handle a stubbed toe, let alone chronic rheumatoid arthritis, right?
You know, one of the things I've heard you talk about is being a maverick. What does that mean?
Well, you know, I came across this idea when I was having a horrible flare-up. I couldn't work anymore and was reading everything I could. And there's this really cool author for people who have diseases that are not necessarily curable. And his name's Mark Ian Barash, and he wrote Remarkable Recovery. And what he did was he looked at people who did recover from incurable illnesses like terminal cancers. And this does happen. And he looked at these people and he talked to them and he tried to think about maybe what they had similar characteristics. And one of them was that they were a maverick. So what that means is you come in as an empowered patient. And the way I see maverick in the term specifically as being, you know, in the role of a patient. So maverick is obviously someone who doesn't necessarily follow the crowd, who makes their own up their own mind and will be, if they see something isn't right, they're going to speak up against that. And so as a patient, being a maverick means you're not a passive participant, you're an active participant. The way I see it is I'm the one who's the expert on my own body. And the people that I go to see, my doctors, my therapists, whoever it is that I'm working with, they're well-trained, very educated consultants. Right? Mm-hmm. So they have these expertise and I consult them. And so that's a very different way of looking at it than patient have to go to a doctor and do what they say. Mm-hmm. And that is more of the older model of how we look at how illness is, what illness is and how it's treated.
Yeah. Well, the whole paradigm itself of a patient versus a client. A patient, what that typically means is under the 100% 24-hour care of a licensed medical provider.
Yeah.
Whereas a client is someone who consults. And so, of course, I'm being persnickety or being very detailed when it comes to that. But when we have that different mindset, just like you said, is I'm consulting this person. And this person, yes, we want to really take their advice and see how it makes sense for us. But if something feels off, then that's our job, like you're saying, is to be that maverick, to be that type A personality person to say, I've tried this. This is not working. What else can we do? As opposed to just saying, oh, there's nothing else. And this is how my life is going to be forever.
Yeah. And I really think that is a hard thing to do. I'm not saying it's easy. Sure. It's very hard, especially in certain medical providers. Some people are more open to I'm lucky that now that I have a beautiful rheumatologist who is totally fine with me being someone who is the decision maker. But other doctors, many other doctors I've visited haven't been so comfortable with that. So it takes a lot of courage to speak up, especially when you're in pain.
Yes.
Especially when you're in pain. In fact, I didn't have that voice like maybe 15 years ago. And I have a really kind of a funny story. It wasn't funny at the time, but I had really swollen knees. And when you have rheumatoid arthritis, sometimes they do something called an aspiration, which means they stick a big horse needle into a swollen joint and suck all the stuff out, all the swelling out. And the end result is great because you feel so much better. You know, you're sticking a horse needle in there. It's not a fun thing.
Not so much.
Right? So I had this experience of having many of these aspirations happening over 6 months. And in the process, they put a steroid medicine in your joint. And you're not really supposed to do that more than a certain amount of times. And so they were doing it very often. And I realized I had one doctor that didn't put a steroid in one knee. The other knee had had it, and it was about the same amount of time before they swelled up. And seeing that information, I realized, I don't know if I need the steroid. I'd rather just get aspirated. But I go to a doctor who really didn't like that idea, didn't like me saying that. And she's standing over me with these big horse needles. My knees are throbbing. I can barely walk to begin with, right? Again, I didn't have the courage back then.
Yeah.
I didn't have the voice. I hadn't read the book.
Intimidating.
I hadn't gotten through that mental process. It's so intimidating. But sure. At this point in time, I know I would have the courage because I know what's at stake.
Yes.
And it's my life.
Yes.
It's not just it's going to be okay. It may not be. Again, for everybody out there, we have to remember it's our life. And we are the ones that have to be good stewards of our body, yes. Right? We're the ones that have the most at stake here. Other people are always going to have opinions. And if you go to a doctor, they're going to have a specific viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And if you go to either a medical doctor, if you go to an acupuncture doctor, they're going to have a different viewpoint. And again, take those viewpoints and take them into your own mind and body and heart and think, and play with trial and error as far as trying some of these things out and being open to options. Because for me, that's one of the keys, is to know that you're never running out of options.
Yes.
You never, never, ever do.
And I think that's a difficulty, is when people don't thrive anymore, then they feel there are no more options.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they just exist and they don't live.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I was in so with my clients is there's always a choice. It may not feel like it, but there's always a choice.
Always a choice.
When
yeah.
We figure out that there may not be options for us now, but we then have a choice to say, well, then what's my choice of my mindset? What's my choice?
Exactly.
I can
so,
control
so true.
Versus what
yeah.
I cannot control. Because when we, once again, build up that resilience, then we will find the fortitude and strength to perhaps come up with a different route of treatment or to find
yeah.
a different provider or someone who can just help us navigate through this for a period of time. And when we serendipitously find the next person who can then help us.
Yeah, those are really, really good points too. And I think also to remember, you don't have to do everything at once. Okay. So you have time.
Mm-hmm.
You have time to figure it out. And in the beginning, for me, you know, there are some people in the camp of totally conventional medicine, the pharmaceutical medical model. It's very important to treat this disease, mm-hmm. you know, ear disease is medicine. Other people are totally on the opposite spectrum. They don't want anything to do with that. And so for me, I feel like two different people, two different, completely different approaches, and maybe both of them are right.
Mm-hmm.
For themselves, right? And I can choose for myself where I want to be on that spectrum. And it's okay. It's okay whatever I choose, as long as I feel okay about it. If I feel good, if I feel hopeful, I feel excited, then I'm doing something right.
Exactly. Because right? It's your life.
Exactly.
It's your life. And we live with the yeah. choices and consequences that may not have been our faults. It's something that's just organic and how we, the luck of the draw, if you will. But then other choices we have beyond that. And then that's when we have to start to take responsibility for that and figure out what works for us.
Right, right.
Let's talk about your books. You wrote two books.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell my listeners a little bit about those books?
The first one is called A Resilient Life, Learning to Thrive, Not Just Survive with Rheumatoid Arthritis.
Oh.
And I know, is that funny?
That is quite funny, actually.
And I wrote that book in a really funny way because, again, I had to stop working.
Uh-huh.
And I was doing all this research and I was thinking, well, shoot, I have all this information. I should teach a class for people. I was telling all my friends, I learned this, and they're like, you need to write a book. And I had five people tell me that in a month. And I said,
my gosh. Well,
okay, I will.
I got
so
it.
That's literally how it happened. And then I realized I really enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
I realized I was good at it. And so the first book is for people with rheumatoid arthritis. And what I had in my head for this book was, what can I help people with? That you go to a doctor appointment, you have rheumatoid arthritis, you go to a doctor, they spend maybe, you know, whatever amount of time they do with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to go home and live with it for the next 6 months until you see the person.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Meanwhile, you can't sleep. You're in pain constantly. How do you deal with stress? How do you deal with the fear? How do you exercise? How do you eat? All these questions, right? So for each of these areas, I created a chapter in the book. And I started with maybe with the problem with pain. For example, what's the issue? What is pain? And then I always like to end with, what can we do about it? There's some options. So then I created some worksheets around that. So that was fun. And then people read that book and people who didn't have arthritis said, well, shoot, you should take the title Rheumatoid Arthritis off there because it's for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, no, I have another book in me.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, because this one, the first one was more of the physical experience uh-huh. with some of the coping and the emotional stuff in there as well. The second, I was going through more of a journey in my own disease process where I had completely dialed in the physical, right? I tried all the diets, all the exercise. I'd done everything I could possibly think of on the planet. And I still had arthritis.
Yeah, at the end of the day, yeah.
at the end of the day. And, you know, I was in the beginning, I went through it like, I'm going to be the one person. I'm going to cure this disease. Yeah. Like, I'm going to be the outlier there. And it didn't happen. And it was that letdown. Like, oh, well, great. Yeah, so now what do I do? I did all this hard work and all these years and struggle. But it helped to some degree. So I started looking into that. I thought, okay, so what is true health? Is it the absence of disease? No. Or is it found in your life, the web of your life, the life you've woven for yourself? And so the second book is called True Health, The Inside Job. And it's more about the internal qualities that we can enhance and work with in order to be healthy, whether we live with severe pain, whether we live with complete paralysis, whatever it is we may live with, you can still enhance certain qualities like Maverick is in there.
Oh, wow.
Like connection and love and belief and purpose and self-care. And actually, I have a chapter on pain in there as well, because for me, I feel like we all have to deal with pain. And pain is a part of life.
Yes.
And if we don't learn to deal with it well, then it's going to cycle down and it will never be healthy. So as you know, suicide is a huge, huge issue in this country.
Yes.
And it is often correlated with things like physical pain and physical disease. So that was an important thing for me to write about.
That's amazing. So yeah.
Yeah. Those two books are definitely things that I really enjoyed doing. And I've heard that they're very helpful
I'm
for
sure
people.
They are.
So. Yeah.
Well, Kat, where would people find all your information online?
Well, I have a website. It's easy, katelton.com with a K. And then my books are also on Amazon.
Wonderful. Well, Kat, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on my show today. It was a pleasure to get to know you, to hear your story, as well as how you instill hope and resilience in your clients as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It was really, really fun. So, so fun to talk to you.
Excellent. Well, thanks again.
Take care.
I also want to thank you, the listener, for joining with me today. Please subscribe to this podcast through whichever podcast portal you joined with me. If you're using iTunes and you like what you hear, please rate this podcast as well as leave your comments on the iTunes podcast page. Also, please visit my website where you may see all my YouTube episodes and published articles I've written for you. You may also enroll in the Lifeology Academy I created where you can take self-directed courses which are designed for successful people just like you. You may find all this information at jamesmillerlifeology.com. Once again, thank you so much for listening to this podcast episode today. Have a fantastic week, and I look forward to talking to you very soon.